Blog Talk Radio.
It's deep in the water somewhere at the blue sky. There's a dark on each mountain. Hey, 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 good morning. This is Cynthia Fontaine and Transforming Your Life. I'm so happy to be here today, day 13 of my 30-day challenge, and I want to thank you all who listen live and those who listen to the replay, and congratulate yourself for showing up in your life. If you're here listening to the show, that means you're showing up and you are invested in you and you're ready to do the work. So congratulations for that. And it's really key to show up in your life because so often I've been talking about this now for, you know, the last 13 days about showing up into your life and how do you show up and how do you hide yourself? Because we have all learned really good ways to hide ourselves and who we really are as an individual. And, you know, it all started back in childhood, the way that we had to get on in our families, the personalities, personas that we had to adopt to survive in our families. And in some families, it was easier than others. You know, it was sort of a mix growing up at my house with my parents. It was, you know, relatively okay while I was young. And then things sort of got dicey as I got, you know, around 10, 11, 12. But I spent the biggest part of my growing up, or a big part of it, with my grandparents. And that was kind of a whole different energy and a whole different ball game at my grandparents' house. Because with my grandparents, with my grandfather, if you weren't a boy, then, you know, you weren't good enough. Only the boys were good. And so I was excluded from activities that went on with my grandfather with the boys because he was an auto mechanic, and he was a lot of things. He was a farmer, and then they had a pig farm, and when pork went south in the 70s, the price bottomed out. They switched from pig farming to junk, and he had a junkyard. And so there were always people there, always boys there, guys there working on cars, as you can imagine. But as a girl, I wasn't allowed to hang out at the garage with the boys because I was a girl. And it wasn't until I was probably like, I don't know, maybe 20, when I painted the garage one time for my grandfather. It was just the door, because the garage was made out of stone. And he came home and the door was all painted. And you know, I did it in, I don't know, an hour. And it was two colors. And he was so impressed with that. Finally, after all those years, I was finally good. Because I did this all by myself. And he bragged on that to everybody that came to the house. Look what my granddaughter did. But life at my grandparents' house wasn't quite so easy. And not because you had to contribute and participate, because even though they switched to junk, they still had pigs, but you know, much lower numbers, and they had chickens and geese, and at one point they had a cow. So you had to, you know, participate in helping with the animals, and usually, you know, I would have to feed them, which is, you know, not hard to do. Except for the geese. The geese were pretty nasty. You had to go in the geese pen with a shovel because they would bite you for the food. And so they were very unfriendly. So anyway, I don't know why I got on this topic today, this subject right now, but I'm on a little bit of a rant here. And so it all ties in with today's show and what roadblocks and how do you sabotage yourself. And it all goes back to things that trigger you from the past. So we make these vows and we create these little goblins are born when things happen in our lives that we feel shouldn't have had happened, that sort of thing. And so with my grandfather, like I said, it was really tough with him. I never really was accepted until I was in my 20s. But yet, even though I, you know, wanted so badly to be out there in the garage with the boys, because I am a bit of a motorhead. I do love cars. And on the other hand, you know, I was abused by my grandfather growing up when I was little. So it was this weird kind of dichotomy. So I was good enough to be, you know, the victim, and if you think about it that way, but I wasn't good enough to be out with the guys and doing that thing. So I had to stay in the house with my grandmother, which was a great place for me because my grandmother was the one who really started my teaching in the metaphysical world, because she did this work and she did house clearings, and she worked with a remarkable woman in Fall River, Massachusetts, who she would do house clearings with and so forth. And so I learned a lot from my grandmother growing up. And so I was, even though I did learn a lot, it kind of scared me, the things that they did and that she talked about. When, for example, one time they went and they cleared this house, and whatever they took out, whatever spirit they took out, I don't know how to shut that off. You can't call into Skype when I'm on the air, but for some reason, you can call in on my phone. I don't know. It's strange. So that's probably going to beep again, because that is probably going to be a voicemail. So just ignore it, the beeping. So one time they had cleared this house, and they took the remainder of the herbs. They would burn herbs in the house and say lots of prayers and use holy water and that sort of thing. And there was absolutely not a wave on the river when they took this the ashes to dump in the water. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this huge wave comes up and it takes them both, sucks them both into the water, and neither one of them could swim. So that was kind of enough for me to think, oh, I don't want to do this work. That's crazy. If something out of nowhere can come and suck you into the ocean to drown you. And so hearing stories like that growing up, it kind of freaked me out. What I've come to learn is that in my work, and I bought a haunted house, which you, if you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk about this in the past. And so I was not doing the work, and Spirit decided, we've got to get this girl moving. So when I got divorced, I had 6 weeks to find a place to live with 2 kids, a dog, and a cat. And it was in a period where the housing market had crashed. And so no one was selling houses, and everybody, a lot of people who had lost their homes moved into rentals. So there was not a rental to be found that was affordable, that would take, that was 3 bedrooms that would allow a dog and a cat. And so a week into this, and I looked at houses that spanned probably a 75-mile radius to where I lived, and because I wanted to stay local with the kids so they would be able to interact with their cousins and grandparents and things like that. And I ran into this acquaintance one day from the horse world, because you know that I'm really into horses, and I started with animal communication with talking to horses because I didn't want to talk to people. And now I talk to people all the time, and that's my main work. I still do animal communication, but I rarely get calls for it now because it's the people that need fixing, not the animals generally. And once the people get fixed, the animals straighten out. Okay, so that being said, I buy this haunted house, and then I get thrown in knee-deep into having to deal with the spirit world. And there were 2 vortexes or portals in this house, and so it was a parade of spirits of all different kinds coming through there constantly 24 hours a day, and it was quite the experience, I'll tell you. And so I had to jump in and figure it out, and that was the way that spirit, the universe, pushed me into getting on my path, because I was not going willingly after hearing all those stories grow up. So over the years, you know, one of the ways that I would sabotage myself is by not living fully in my gifts. And because I have so much gift and talent in the area of the psychic world and intuition and spirituality and so forth, I would not listen to my own gut, my own intuition. And I'll give you a really great example of this. When I was getting married, I kept putting off the wedding date because I just felt like in my gut something wasn't right. And finally, my now ex-husband said to me at one point, look, we're either getting married or we're not. And so you need to pick a date. So I picked a date, and I moved it twice, and after the second time I moved it, he's like, that's it. If you move it again, it's off. So the week that we're getting married, and I also got hired to work for the government that same week, which was a job I didn't want because I didn't want to work for the government, and I never wanted to even take the test for the job, but my mother didn't want to take the test by herself. She wanted the job. She didn't pass the test. I did. I got hired. There you go, right? So looking back, of course I was supposed to be there because the universe put that in my path. And I'm grateful for it now, of course. And it was really good practice for me talking to people all the time and also delivering messages. So I've been delivering messages now for over 30 years in one form or another. But in my own life, I wasn't listening to my inner guidance, my intuition, because I doubted it. So the week I'm getting married and have this job interview, I got really, really sick with double ear infections and strep throat that was like horrific. It was the worst one I had ever had. And I literally could not get out of bed. And I had designed and made my own wedding dress because at that time I was designing clothes. I had a whole portfolio. I had gone to school for fashion merchandising and taken some design classes. And that's what I really wanted to do, but then decided I didn't want to live in New York, where if you're a designer, you really have to do that. And so I said, well, I'm not doing that because I don't want to live in New York. And so, but I kept designing and making my designs, bringing them to life. And I would, you know, wear the things that I designed. My kids laugh at some of the things that I design now, looking at pictures, including my wedding dress. They say it looks like a 57 Chevy, which, being a car geek, no surprise, right? It's got big wings on it. And that kind of was the idea. Anyway, so the dress was not done. And here's the wedding. And so I decide that I'm not going. The dress wasn't finished. I was so sick. And I said, oh, you know, there's a reason why I'm so sick. And of course, because I strep throat is strep throat. Okay, if you have throat issues, it's about not speaking your truth, not speaking your words. And my truth was, I felt that there was something not quite right, but yet I didn't speak it out loud because I didn't know what it was. And part of what it turned out to be was my ex-husband is an alcoholic. And at the time, I didn't know he was drinking. So we were high school sweethearts, and then things happened. Anyway, make a long story short, we broke up my senior year of high school, and we went off and did other things. And then a couple of years later, his mother got us back together again. So in high school, he partied like a lot of kids do party in high school. And but he partied, you know, to a level that I was not aware of. And anyhow, because I wasn't into that scene. So when we started seeing each other again, you know, he swore he didn't drink anymore and he didn't do drugs or any of that stuff. And every time we were together, that was true. He didn't drink. And, you know, he was never intoxicated. And so I thought, okay, so, you know, it was a high school thing and he's done with it. But about a month before the wedding, a month and a half before the wedding, this was after we got married. Before. So just before the wedding, he came home. It was his birthday in the middle of the day, and he was skunked. And I said, what is this? It's in the middle of the day, and you're intoxicated. And he said, oh, they had a birthday party for me at work. So I thought, okay, but there's the red flag, right? And again, my inner feeling was saying something is not right. And so we were supposed to get married in September. I pushed it to October. Then I pushed it to November. And that's when I got the, hey, we're either doing this or we're not. And decided the week of the wedding, I wasn't going because I was so sick. And I thought that is, you know, I just couldn't go. So as the day of the wedding comes and the time of the wedding comes, I'm still at home and I'm not going to the wedding. And half an hour after the wedding time was scheduled, his sister shows up to come and get me to take me to the wedding because everybody was there waiting. So here I am finishing the hem on the dress, which is all I had left at that point. And she whisks me off to the wedding and I get married. So looking back, you know, of course, there's lessons in everything. So how did this, you know, was it meant to be? Well, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But the lesson for me is to speak my truth. And in that time in my life, I wasn't able to speak my truth. So I sabotaged myself by holding my words. And when I say holding your words, it doesn't mean that you have to speak out in anger or things like that. But come into your core. Find your heart. You know, before you have to have a big conversation with someone, do some deep breathing and come into your heart space and, you know, breathe, ground yourself, that kind of thing. And speak from the heart, because no matter how difficult a conversation it is, when it comes from the heart, the other person can really feel the genuineness of that. And though it may be a hard conversation that you need to have, the other person is able to sort of accept it on a better level. So I self-sabotage by not using my voice. You see, because when I was a kid growing up, you know, we came from that sort of era or time period where kids were meant to be seen and not heard, and that it was okay if you were outside to be vocal, but when you're in the house, that wasn't really acceptable. You could go play, that kind of thing. And we had 5 kids, so that's a lot of kids who can make a lot of noise. And I don't ever remember my mother really scolding us for being too loud. But at my grandparents' house, you know, that was not acceptable. And oftentimes, the cousins would be at the grandparents' house. There'd be a lot of kids there on a weekend for Sunday dinner. But of course, we were, you know, outside most of the time. But if we were inside, we had to be upstairs playing, or we had to be watching TV quietly. And my grandfather had this funny thing where he watched this TV show called Dialing for Dollars. And he kept this logbook, because Dialing for Dollars was, they would take the telephone book and they would pick a phone number and they would call people several times during the show. And if you knew how much money was in the jackpot, you would win the jackpot. So my grandfather decided that he was going to win Dialing for Dollars and that guy was going to call him. So he had this logbook. So you were not allowed to talk for the 2 hours that Dialing for Dollars was on. You weren't allowed to use the phone, because God forbid if they ever call and you were on the phone. So these are the funny kind of things my grandfather did. And so you were not allowed to talk. And it's interesting, because I have a sibling who is a big NASCAR fan. And with her kids growing up, and still to this day, when the race is on, the kids were not allowed to talk. I mean, not allowed to say a word, not even during a commercial. That's pretty torturous for a little kid. So me growing up, I was often told, you know, I was disruptive in class because I talked, and I did talk a lot. And I like to talk. I like people. Now I like people. No, I've always liked people. I just didn't want to work with people and all their problems, you know. But so I was, I always had this thing where I was always told, you're talking too much. And in high school, it was about singing, how the music teacher decided that I would never have a career in singing because my singing voice wasn't very good as far as he was concerned, and that maybe I could sing a little bit local pop, and that would be that. So I stopped singing after that, and I haven't sung in many years, and I recently sang at school for the first time since my senior year of high school out in public, and it was not very good because I haven't sung in so long, and we didn't have background music. We didn't have a key to start in. It was this challenge. And anyway, didn't know the words to the song because it had just been written 5 minutes before. But it was enough to break through that area where I was sabotaging myself for so long. And now I'm singing all the time, whether it's good or bad. So you might catch me singing on the radio someday. Sometimes I sing along with the music, the opening and closing music. So you might listen for that. Anyway, so in my mind, I've always heard this, oh no, you can't sing, for all these years. I shouldn't say always, but for all these years, I've heard you can't sing. And it's interesting because my grandfather was one who actually thought I had a great singing voice. And he was always trying to get me to sing with the band. They would go out every Saturday night to this place called the Golden Dream, and they would go out dancing. And it was country. It was a country. They had country dancing on Saturday nights. And my grandfather was always trying to get me to sing with the band because he loved my singing. And at that point, you know, I was really shy about my singing, but I felt like I did have a good quality singing voice, and I could sing on key and everything. But I was too afraid to do it. because all those years growing up when I was in trouble for talking, how could I get up there and sing in front of people? So it's like you have the ego mind. The way I like to visualize it is like you've seen in the commercials where you've got the angel on one side, you've got the little devil on the other side, okay? So if you think about those two images and you think about the little devil being the ego mind and a little angel being the higher mind and the subconscious, which is really where you get change to happen in your life, is when you get into the subconscious mind. So you got that little devil whispering in your ear, oh, you can't do that. Oh, you're not good enough. Oh my goodness, why did you do that, right? We all have it. And so the key is to, you can do several things. You can reassign that little devil a new job. So now you can say, okay, look, buddy, you can give him a name. You could change him to a goblin if you want, or a gremlin or whatever. So you give him a name and a face, and you reassign his job. And you say, okay, look, your job now is to blah, blah, blah. And keep reminding him what his new job is. And the new job has to be something that he can help you with in your life. It has to be a positive thing. And, of course, the angel, you want to keep the way she or he is to give you the good stuff, right? And so, again, that's the ego mind and the higher mind, the subconscious, the devil and the angel. And so where are your traps? You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So who are you listening to? And same voice in your head that you've been listening to for 1, 2, 3, 5, 6 decades? And how's that working out for you? I know for me, it wasn't working out so good. And trust me, I am not perfect by any means. And I still have lots of work to do and lots of work way to go. That being said, I have done lots of personal work and self-development and spirituality for many, many, many years now. And, you know, this is a road where back in my 30s, I thought, oh, I had done some spiritual work or some self-help work and things like that. And I had a little counseling and I thought, oh, God, thank goodness, you know, I'm okay now. And I reached a plateau where I felt like, you know, my life was pretty good. I kind of knew where I was going. I felt pretty secure in my own self. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years later, wham, here comes this relationship that throws me totally off guard. Was not expecting it when it showed up. And isn't that the way it happens, right? When you're not expecting it, all of a sudden this person shows up. And they show up really to help you see the biggest things that you need to work on in your life. So here this person comes into my life, and it seemed like all the things that I had worked on now were coming back to surface. And I said, how could this be? I worked on this, and it was better. Why is this situation coming back up again? So what I didn't know back then is that we're like an onion, and you have to peel the layers off one layer at a time. And so the situation appeared to be the same or very similar as it was with my ex-husband, but yet it was different because I was different. So really take that in. So if you're in a situation that appears that might feel familiar, look familiar, you think it's the same, keep in mind that the circumstances may look the same. However, you are not the same person you were when you dealt with that similar circumstance in the past, because we're always evolving, changing, and growing. And so if that's the case for you, then remember, I'm not the person that I was then, and I have more information, more knowledge, different perspective, and therefore I'm going to handle this situation differently. Where we get hung up is we get caught in the mind trap or the ego trap or that gremlin, goblin, devil voice in our head saying, oh, this is the same as it was when John was here in 2003, we'll say, for example. And but it's not the same. But the mind is always looking to make connections to make things the same and to keep things the same and not from changing. Because what would happen if it changed? What would the ego do? The ego doesn't want you to change. That small voice in your head doesn't want you to change. It wants things to stay the same. And so it sends you back to that time and place, though you may not be even aware of it. And you're right back in that feeling and emotion from when a similar situation happened in the past. So it triggers that feeling and emotion. And your mind goes, here it is again, exactly the same. So the mind is always looking for similarities, but it is always also looking for the worst case scenario. So it's going to look for the similarities, and then it's going to look for the worst case scenario on top of that. So really getting control over the ego mind, and when I say control, it's learning to work with it in a way that sort of can reconfigure it, giving it a new job. If you have this chatterbox that is incessantly going on in your head, and it's always nonsense, right? You can put the little chatterbox, give her a face, a name. I say her because, you know, typically most women talk more than men, although I know some men who are really good talkers. So put that chatterbox in a box and say, nope, you have to go to sleep now. Put her in a box and say, and don't let her out, you know. So start getting tools to help you in your everyday life deal with these triggers, okay? When you have something come up in your life, it's a great idea to say, when am I? And that triggers the subconscious mind to say, okay, am I dealing with this issue that's coming up before me right now in the present moment and who I am now? Or am I in the past when this situation with John in 2003 happened that looks the same? When am I? And oftentimes you will find that you are in that trigger point, that emotion from the past. And once you can see that, recognize that, very oftentimes that is enough to shift it. You can come into the present moment and say, oh, yes, okay, this is who I am right now in the present moment. And though this looks familiar, I know it is different because I'm a different person. See, because life is not linear like we look at time and time is linear. Life is a spiral. Sometimes you're going up the spiral. Sometimes you're coming down the spiral. But you're never in the exact same place on the spiral at any moment in time because we are constantly moving and changing. And the same with our bodies. We get new cells every single day. And the body completely remakes itself in, I can't remember if it's 7 or 10 years, where you don't have not one cell left from when you had the cells that you had in your body, say, 10 years ago. All your cells are different. So the body keeps evolving and changing as well. And when you see things like spontaneous remission, that's because that person has been able to understand and come to a knowing where your body can change in any moment. Your body has the ability to heal itself. It's got its own built-in medicine chest. But we have not been, we've been taught not to access that anymore because of big pharmaceutical and the, you know, dirty farming. They want us to be on all these pills and drugs and, you know, and that's how you take care of things. Well, you don't fix things with over-the-counter medications, I mean prescription medications. They actually cause more problems than they help. And there are certain instances where you have to have, you know, medical help and a prescription because there are no other alternatives. And I understand that, but I really feel strongly that it's important to look at other options that are available out there to you because there are things that can help you that aren't necessarily always the traditional route, which, by the way, the traditional route is really not the traditional route of medicine. The traditional route of medicine is natural medicine. So what we have today with the allopathic medicine is really the alternative medicine because that's not the original medicine. The original medicine is back to nature. But they flopped that around and, you know, convoluted it. And now, fortunately, mainstream is starting to become aware of holistic techniques and medications and how beneficial, you know, it can really be. My own self, where I was told that I had to have neck surgery because I had blown discs out in my neck and that, you know, I have spinal cord impingement and bone spurs and all kinds of craziness, that I would have to have neck surgery in order to have any kind of function to be able to function somewhat normally in my life. And I, fortunately, it was a work injury and the work took so long to approve the injury. By the time they finally accepted the claim, I could hold my head up and I could sit in a chair and I could at that point drive for 10 minutes a day. And so I was doing a lot of alternative therapies to get to that point where I was seeing a cranial sacral practitioner and I was getting massage therapy and I was learning about meditation, and I had already delved into Reiki, and I was already practicing Reiki at that point for probably a couple of years with a regular group once a week, and I had taken taken the Reiki certifications, and so I had this fortunate blessing where I was exposed to Reiki prior to my neck going the way it did. And so that left me open to be able to explore the idea of looking at some other alternatives. And it was really for pain relief. I didn't think that it would be anything more than that, where it would, those techniques would help me get to the point where I could at some point get back to work, which took me 2 years to get back to my job, but I was able to do it. And my surgeon looks at my MRIs and just shakes his head and says, "There's no explanation why you can even get out of bed in the morning looking at these MRIs." So I didn't let a prognosis sabotage my life. I didn't accept the prognosis. I decided that, and I was determined that I was going to get back to my job no matter what, and how long it took, I was going to do it. I was going to get back to it. So in that case, I didn't allow the saboteur to just lie down and accept whatever the doctor said. That's where my charismatic leader came in and said, "Oh no, I'm going to fight this," because a charismatic leader will come to the fight. So I was able to fight my way back to, somewhat being healthy. And, you know, I still have challenges, minor challenges, though, here and there. But I do a lot of self-care. So I'll go get a massage. I'll get Reiki. And also when I do healings, you know, I get a healing myself. And so luckily, my saboteur did not live in that chakra, And so, but my saboteur has lived in my throat chakra, my voice, for a long time. So ask yourself, where does your saboteur live? How do you sabotage yourself? Is it by not using your words when it would be a good idea to? Or is it having, you know, diarrhea of the mouth and just blurting everything out and sabotaging yourself in that way without thinking things through? God, look at Sarah Palin and her endorsement for Donald Trump this past week. I mean, talk about diarrhea of the mouth, right? Oh my God. How that woman's brain works is just amazing. It would be interesting if you could cut it open and study it. Her wires must be jumping all over the place because they certainly can't connect to make any sense. But it does give us really great Saturday Night Live material. So that's a good thing. And also we have months and months of this to look forward to. So you have to take the humor in it, right? Especially when it comes to politics, because people get really serious about it. And you've got to see the humor in it. So how do you sabotage in your family, right? So your tribe, because if you come from a family where you didn't have a good foundation, maybe you sabotage there with your family or your one-on-one relationship. You know, and this can happen often if you had abuse as a child, where your saboteur or your victim might live in your second chakra, and that's where it's between just below your belly button. That might be where your saboteur lives. And so do you sabotage your one-on-one relationships, always expecting what you got from the past relationships, even though this is a different relationship? And with relationships, what happens so often too is people get, you know, they get into relationships, then they get out of relationships, then they get into another relationship or marriage, and then 5 years, 6, 7 years down the road, they're having all the same issues that they had in the previous relationship. And why is that? Because if you get right back into a relationship and have not done some kind of personal work, self-development, diving into your subconscious mind and what makes you tick, then what the universe is going to bring you is exactly what you had before, because the ego mind is always calling out to get what's familiar. And it's always looking for the worst possible case scenario that can happen. So then you get into this next relationship and wham, oh my God, this looks just like the last one. How could this be? It's with a different person. I moved across the country and here I am again. Well, that's because you haven't done the work. So really, some good work to start looking at sabotaging and where your saboteur lives is if you get into some of Carolyn Mace's work and the Anatomy of Spirit, where she talks about you could do that, or you could look at her archetype work, because she talks about in her archetype work that, you know, we have an archetype that lives in every chakra, and we have 12 chakras. We have 7 physical chakras, and then we have 5 spiritual chakras, spiritual centers. And so there is a archetype that lives in every single chakra, and the saboteur is one of the archetypes. And where you sabotage your life is the chakra that the saboteur will live in. And again, so mine is my voice, which I've gotten so much better with, and being on the radio has really helped that. And so if you sabotage your one-on-one relationships, that'll be in your second chakra. If you sabotage how you present yourself into the world, so if you are somebody who is in and out of jobs or somebody who makes a lot of money then loses it, your saboteur is probably in your third chakra. if you make a lot of money and lose it, that might be in your first chakra because that's your foundation. It's like the foundation of your house. So it could be there. So this is something you can play around with. But finding out where your saboteur lives, what chakra it lives in, can be really, really, really helpful. Because then you say, oh, yes, my saboteur lives in my throat chakra. So I know that I really need to work on being able to speak my truth. And often that means you have to find your truth, right? What is your truth? What are your gifts? We've been talking about this now for 13 days, bringing your gifts out into the world, busting out and busting into your life. And I've given you a lot of different ideas and tools for you to work with that you can practice to help you do that. And these are all things that I have learned over the many years of my studying that have been effective for me and effective for others who I know or who I have worked with in the past. So I really encourage you to, you know, take some of these ideas, if it feels right for you, and really implement them and see how they work for you. And take it even a step further. Look at Carolyn Mace's archetype work. And that's a really, really, really good thing to do, is to start learning and understanding archetypes and what archetypes are yours. We all have four archetypes. Everybody has four main archetypes, and the four main archetypes will be in one of your seven physical chakras, and that is the saboteur, the victim, the prostitute, and the child. So my child lives in my seventh chakra, and I'm always, you know, dreaming and exploring, and I have this magical child who loves nature, and so my child lives in my seventh chakra. My saboteur lives in my throat. My victim is in my heart because I'm always feel victimized in my relationship. My prostitute lives in my first chakra, and that's my tribe. So I will prostitute myself to my family, and that means that I will bend over backwards to do things for my tribe, even if I don't want to do them. So I'll sell myself out to my family. And victim fourth, child seventh, prostitute first, and then, saboteur fifth. Okay, I guess I got them all. Yeah, there we go. And so that's been really helpful for me to learn these things and to start understanding and playing around with it. And I've moved them around into different chakras several times to see where they really fit and how they feel. So when you're doing this kind of work, if you dive into it, that's really the key, is to start playing around with it and ask yourself questions. Okay, do I feel a victim in my relationships? That'll be in your, you know, it depends how you're victimized also, because the victim could be in your second chakra and your saboteur could be in your fourth if you're sabotaging the relationship. So it's sort of tricky, but if you play around with it and really dive into it and start studying about it, you'll be able to figure it out. And if you can't, then, you know, get some help. Go to healer school or work with people who are, experts in that particular field. So let's see. We're coming to a close on the show here. And so I thought about, oh, here we go, another show. What am I going to talk about today? And I said to my daughter about half an hour before the show started, I don't know what I'm talking about today. I haven't written a show. And here I am, 50 minutes later, still talking. So that, I think the saboteur has done a pretty good job of being tamed in my fifth chakra. Although when it comes to one-on-one relationships, that there is my challenge. And I'm working on that. And speaking my truth. Because really, how often do you say something and not even realize that it's coming from an old wound? that it's coming from a place that feels familiar. And so the ego mind will say, oh, this looks just like that. And then the emotions will come up that you had then. And remember, again, that the ego mind is always looking for a familiar scenario and the worst possible case, the worst possible way it can happen. And that's what it's going to keep bringing to you. So meditate, people. That's how you start to calm that ego mind. Start working with that. And I just recently learned a really cool technique that I think is awesome for, especially for you guys out there who say, I can't meditate. And this is from the Sylvia Mind Control. And I know you hear mind control, ooh, right? No, they have some really great techniques. So the thought is believed that the mind thinks or sees the future coming from the left. So if you can imagine that you have a video screen and that is to your left side of yourself, just, you know, sort of in your peripheral vision, you can see it, but it's not directly in front of you. So you can use this with a video screen, or if you use an iPad, that's another great thing that you can visualize this with. So you look at the screen, you see the screen, and so the situation on what's on the screen is the situation that has recently come up for you. That is, you're having a problem with, you're being sabotaged, or you're being triggered, or whatever. So, say for example, you have a disagreement with a child, or a spouse, or a partner, or something. And oh, and there's a white feather. There's my brother saying hello. He showed up in the show. Oh, there's two white feathers. He showed up with a white feather yesterday in the show. This is the finest little tiny feather. Oh, I love it. I love my brother. And I see him now more. He's around now more now that he's passed away than when he was living. So, you know, your loved ones are always there. They're always around. They're available. Even if they go off to do other things, you can still enjoy them, even though they don't have the physical body. Okay, but that's a whole nother show. All right, so back to this meditation technique and, sort of quieting that ego mind, you know, the mind that you just can't get out of, and you're revisiting that situation over and over again, and it's playing in your head. And it's playing out how it happened. And of course, and again, the mind is always looking to go to the worst case scenario. Okay. So what if you could now rewrite that situation? Okay. So it's just like if you rewrite a movie. So here you've got your movie up. It's on the screen, right? It just to the left of you, and it's playing. And as it's playing, you can now take your hands, both your hands, put your hands on the screen and slide it over from the left to your right. And as you're sliding it, imagine how you would like that situation to change and imagine a positive outcome. Imagine that you can change the situation and now allow it to unfold in front of you in a positive way with a positive ending. So you've got two movies, one with an ending that's not so nice, that you're not, you know, really not good. And then you have another movie that has a, you know, wonderful, beautiful ending. So rewrite the movie. So as you slide the movie screen across, and it comes into your view, observe it and watch it just like you're alive watching this movie. Just like if you're watching a movie on TV or go to the movie theater, right? So imagine that this movie is playing, and you can also use an iPad for your screen if you'd like. But so you do the same thing. So you're going to drag the iPad screen swipe it from the left to the right and change the screen, change the picture. So what happens when you can now go back and see the situation unfold the way that you wanted it to, with a positive ending coming from the left to the right, that can change the future of this issue. And it can, you'll find that often whatever the issue was will resolve itself within a short period of time. So play around with that. See how you can work with that and if that works for you. Like, again, this is something new that I've just learned that I'm really excited to explore and play around with. So let me know how you make out playing around with this technique. And, you know, if you want to learn more about it, then go on the Sylvia Mind Control. I'm sure you can find stuff on YouTube or on their website or whatever. And check it out. Excuse me. So we are about out of time. Now here I thought, what am I going to talk about today? And I found lots of things to talk about. But we are out of time. And I just want to say to all you football fans out there, rooting for your team, good luck. Of course, I'm rooting for the Patriots. Here is the playoff game for the Super Bowl against Peyton Manning again. And I am so rooting for the Patriots because they are my home team. So I'm going to say, put the Angels out to the Patriots. And I'm going to visualize a positive outcome. So we will be on our way to the Super Bowl once again. I love you all so very much. Have a fabulous and blessed day wherever you are in the world.
Gonna fill up the list. My love, but I lost it. Knee deep in the water somewhere, got the blue skies on the sea. Where in the world is it not gonna reach my chair? Where is the world at the time gonna reach my chair? I'm gonna be my own kind of down awesome. I'm trying.